This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Josh, you know what time of year it is? It's that time of year where I look at how many people have entered the transfer portal on a daily basis to have these numbers climbing up. Remember last year was blown away, right?
Didn't it go like up to like hundreds at a hundreds at a time?
In basketball, this is basketball right now. As of today, 610 names in the transfer portal.
Wow.
And we are not even, there are still 16 teams playing in college basketball.
How much do you think it'll be at this year by the end of it?
Oh, it'll be probably close to 1,500.
Really?
I think
it'll be over 1,000, but...
I mean, maybe. I don't know exactly. I will say this. I looked 10 minutes ago. There were 600. I just looked. There's 610. It's like one a minute climbing up. It's unbelievable, right? Yeah, this is the time of year. I'm going to be updating, hey, every day. Hey, we're up to 800 people in the transfer portal, 900 people in the transfer portal. It's unbelievable, this thing, and what it's become, I guess. Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Hey, if you want to tweet me, at Sal Sports, that was always getting connected with our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. So free agency still rolling on. The draft is exactly 1 month from tonight. If you haven't followed and watched what Eric Turner and the gang are doing over at Cover One, they do a great job of breaking down film, Bills players, NFL players, draft prospects, and he had some real good stuff on some of the guys the Bills have signed, so I reached out to Eric to join me today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and he's on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
Thanks, Al. Appreciate you having me on, brother.
Yeah, no problem at all. All right, I feel like, I don't know if you've ever seen when Colin Cowherd brings on, who is it, what he has, he comes on, he says, what does the tape say? I want to say that to you. What does the tape say, Eric? All right. Anyway, let's do it. Let's start with Joshua Palmer. They're one of the first guys that they sign in free agency, a wide receiver. Eric, what does the tape say to you about how he fits in the Bills' offense?
Listen, I love that intro. That's perfect. I'm gonna hang my hat on that one. Yeah, with... When I watched Palmer's film, he just knew how to win, you know, whether it's with his size, being 6'1", you know, 210 plus, or his route running. And that's where he kind of hangs his hat, right, the route running. But his ability to separate at all three levels, his ability to separate at the top of breaks, he's a guy that I'm sure probably doesn't get the respect when it comes, like, to the physical measurables and speed and creating separation that way. But I bet if you talked and pulled a lot of cornerbacks at the NFL level, they would mention his name as a guy that is of difficult cover because of his ability to sell routes and to make things look similar until that moment of truth when he breaks and he creates that separation.
Do you think that this was a player that the Bills just really needed from a stylistic standpoint? Is there anything about Palmer's game specifically that you felt that they needed to target? Because I know you were on him early, and you said this is a guy that they should want to bring in.
Well, yeah, like I said, when I started with the film, he stood out. And then I looked at the advanced metrics, and I'm like, holy cow, he really stood out from a perspective of creating separation, especially if you're looking at his man routes, which was like up over 100 routes last year in man, and he created a lot of separation. He was in a lot of those stats near the top or top rank, top 10 in those stats. And so the film and the analytics matched up. And I just think about Joe Brady and how well he schemed up and really curated this offense. And really at a point when Josh has kind of evolved from just a guy that, you know, for many years just relied on athleticism, outside of structure type plays, or last year he did a lot of stuff within structure, pure progression type stuff that really relied on Allen being and throwing in rhythm. And I think Palmer fits that perfectly when you're talking a scheme perspective, the X-type player that can really play outside along the boundary, win outside the numbers, but also, if needed, can bump inside and create mismatches against linebackers and nickelbacks.
Do you think it says anything about Keon Coleman from what you've seen from him and the way the Bills have talked about him? Because he's a guy that obviously doesn't run down the field, get separation, but he gets separation in his own way on the outside as well.
Absolutely. I think that's probably the guy that's going to benefit the most from having Palmer in the room. He's very similar skill set, very similar, you know, physical measurables. And again, I talk about that pros pro in Palmer. I think Keon's going to learn a ton from Keon Coleman. And I think just from all the breadcrumbs that we've heard from the staff and even from the player himself, I feel like Keon Coleman, you know, his craft and recommitting to it this offseason, going into the season next year, I think he's going to pick up a lot from Palmer. And like I said, I think he'll benefit the most.
We'll circle back to wide receiver when we talk about some draft prospects and what they need. But let's go to the defensive side. They signed Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi, and I understand that the PED suspension is happening. But let's just talk about them and where they fit in this defense. When everybody's available, everybody's healthy, we're halfway through the year. Where does Michael Hoyt fit into this defense? He's a guy that really has so many different ways you can use him. How do the Bills figure out how to use him?
Yeah, that's what he excites me from a schematic standpoint as well, because he's played several different positions along the D-line. He's played off the ball, on the ball, at linebacker. But I think really what the Bills were trying to do with him is two things. One, bring on a guy that can help in obvious pass rush situations, third down situations, with his football IQ and acumen. Because, again, he's played several positions, and he knows how to win, whether he's at D-tackle, D-end, off the ball. And so I think that football intelligence and pass rush acumen is going to help the third down pass rush packages where he specialized as what the Rams would call a spinner role. It's kind of like an off the ball linebacker type, but also lined up, you know, inside linebacker, D tackle at times. I think that's kind of what the Bills were envisioning with Dwayne Smoot last year. And if you go back and watch some of the film on those obvious third down pass rush situations, Smoot was making a lot of those line calls. And that is what Michael Hoyt brought to the Rams in that spinner role last year on third down. So I think that's the big thing with him. And it's just going to unlock a different set of, you know, creativity to the Bills defense that we haven't seen since a guy that we comped into was Lorenzo Alexander. And it kind of reminds me of, like, that tight end, that really good tight end on offenses where, like, Kyle Juszczyk, who's kind of that clone, that tight end fullback. When he comes onto the field, the defense has to realize, like, okay, are we going to match with a third linebacker or are we going to match with our nickel? Because he's that talented in the pass game as well. Hoyt's very similar on the defensive side of the ball where you have to account for him as a pass rusher, but you also have to account for him in coverage when they spin out post-snap.
It's interesting you say that. I actually asked Lorenzo about Michael Hoyt and the comp, and he said something very interesting to me. He said his first year when Sean McDermott took over and he was already here and he had that monster year the year before, he said they were trying to figure out how to use him best. But then his second year, they really understood more how to use him best. And the numbers bear it out, Eric, whereas his first year he had 3 sacks and he jumped to 6.5. He had 2 interceptions his second year. What's the trick, I guess, the Bills are facing here in the challenge of, okay, you do a lot of things really well, but we can't get lost in trying to just put you everywhere and maybe focusing in on a couple things you do really well in certain matchups.
Right, and that's why I said I think that when they signed him, it was going to be more of that third down role, because when the Bills are in third down in obvious pass rush situations, you've seen them do some, you know, semi-creative stuff this last couple of years, whether it's having 6 defensive backs and dime in there, whether it's having, you know, 3 defensive linemen, and then, you know, a couple linebackers. And so I think Hoyt can be in there on those third downs. And, you know, he may be in a two-point stance over the guard on third down, but not even rush the passer, end up dropping out, like kind of like Milano did in that, in those spy situations. And so I think they can get back to some of that creativity that really makes the offense guess, okay, they may be only sending four rushers, which has been the Bills' philosophy predominantly, but which four rushers are coming when Hoyt is in the game?
All right, let's talk about rushers. Joey Bosa, they go and get the dynamic player from L.A. Obviously, some injuries have slowed him down the last few years. What do you see from Joey Bosa? What did you see from him on the film that you've watched, and how will he fit in the Bills' defense?
I mean, when you watch the film and you don't look at any production numbers or anything like that or any injury reports, you could tell he was hampered by something. You know, you could tell he was injured and working through and playing injured the entire year. But there were glimpses towards the end of the year of the old Joey Bosa. But again, you could tell he was still injured. Still has a very good first step, but he's more of that predominant speed to power type pass rusher still, which he's probably in the upper tier when we're talking about that. When you want those pass rushers to, you know, work off the edge and work through the tackle rather than trying to go around the tackle, maybe getting run wide of the quarterback spot. He wants to take that shortest, quickest line of the quarterback through that tackle. Still has very good hand usage. That really didn't drop off. And just he understands pass sets by the tackles, but also the depth of the drop of the quarterback. So he has a good idea where that quarterback's setting up and what move to use to get there quickly.
Do you think he could be he should be at this point a three-down player considering the roster and how it's constructed at his age, the injuries, what you've seen from him as an edge rusher, and also keeping him healthy, obviously?
Right. Last year, with those injuries, even the Chargers were very calculated with his usage. I mean, if you look at the down splits, first, second, third down, it was pretty even, 150 snaps across the board. They were very calculated with him. I think the Bills will do the same thing. One, you know, calculated going into the game, but also I think the Bills naturally do that with their defensive line rotation. So I think it works out in both ways. So I do think they will manage his reps and load and obviously have him predominantly in pass rush situations. And that's what excites me about him is because you add him into the lineup in those situations, and now the opposing offensive coordinator, the offensive line coach, and that quarterback throughout the week in those situations have to, okay, ID, where is Joey Bosa, and how are we going to get the protections to slow him down? He was doubled nearly 40% of the time last year, more than Khalil Mack, obviously. And so that to me is like, okay, if they're doubling him and they're sliding protections and they're sending chips his way, what's that going to do as a force multiplier for the D-tackles and D-ends opposite him?
Let's talk about Larry Ogunjobi on the interior. The Bills go get him. Obviously, he's also facing a six-game PED. Talking with people in Pittsburgh, they say, well, maybe wasn't the greatest defense for him. He was productive at times. There were other times he kind of disappeared. What do you see from him, and how do you think he fits?
Yeah, he definitely was playing out of position or not being maximized in the way that I think the Bills are going to, because he played more of an odd front, so more of a 3-4 type front, and he was a DN that was asked to, in many ways, stack and shed and read. So you're reading the offensive linemen, you're determining what they're running against you, and then you're stack and shedding so that the other four linebackers can go make plays. And so that, to me, kind of minimized what I think his strengths are, and his strengths are his first-step explosion, his ability to initially quickly win positional leverage into the gap, and then going from there being disruptive. Is it always pretty? No. He wins ugly in a lot of ways, but he creates chaos at the point of attack. And that's why I think he is a great fit for the Bills, whether you're talking being a backup three tech to Ed Oliver or even challenging Daquan Jones for starting reps at nose tackle. He's played that position in the Bills-type scheme in Cincinnati, and he's done it with the Cleveland Browns. And he won a lot. I mean, he was playing a 200-400 snaps as a nose tackle in a similar front to the Bills. And now, albeit it was a few years ago. So I do think he's a great fit. Obviously, they'll have to wait for him and Hoyt for a few games because of the suspensions. But I do think he's a great fit. And I think that regardless of where they put him with that rotation, I think he's going to make plays and maximize those reps.
Eric Turner joining me here on the Western Hotline and the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric. That's with a K, by the way, at Eric J. Turner. He is the founder of Cover One Football. You can follow them at Cover in the number one, Cover One. All right. Before we get to the draft, something really interesting that you did at the end of last year that I referred to a lot here on the radio was comparing Milano and Dorian Williams and the Bills' decision to stick with Matt Milano when he came back from injury. And I thought that was really well done. Maybe you can explain to people not only A, why the Bills stuck with Matt Milano after the injury when he came back, but B, why they've also decided to still have Matt Milano on the roster, albeit on a restructured contract, but he is coming back in 2025 to be their starting will linebacker.
I think that comes to, one, obviously experience in big games and in big positions. He's always been that playmaker for the Bills, and they're loyal, let's be honest. They're pretty loyal to a lot of the players, especially their draft picks. But Milano's still a better cover linebacker. That is one issue with Dorian that we've seen. Now, has he progressed? Absolutely. But Dorian Williams has been more of a run-and-chase guy, and in many ways the scheme, it changes just a little bit when he's in there because they want to funnel plays to him so he can go make tackles because he's a great tackler. He might be one of the most consistent tacklers at the linebacker position for the Bills, and he's got that athleticism to go with it. But he's still moving through and working through some of those struggles and ups and downs in coverage. You know, one play he'll get beat on a wheel route up the sideline, and then in the fourth quarter the offense tries it again, and then he'll go ahead and make a play. So there is you know, incremental development when it comes to that, but Matt Milano – He's still a better cover linebacker, and he's seen it a lot more. And I think that, you know, in many ways, what they did with his contract, I think they still believe he can come back to, what is it, 85% of what elite Matt Milano is. And so I do think that we'll see situations where maybe, you know, Dorian does see the field a little bit. And, of course, now that's if even with Milano and, you know, his health and injury history, we'll have to see there. But I think having guys like Milano, Dorian Williams, even Michael Hoyt, because when I interviewed him and did a film room with him, he talked about during the week, most of the time it's spent with linebackers. Mm-hmm. And so when the Bills see those 12 personnels, one running back, two tight ends on the field, which they did see the most, sixth most last year, and were one of the worst teams against 12 personnel, Michael Hoyt is that chess piece. And he can play outside linebacker. He can play on the ball with three linebackers on the field, play on the ball like a Sam linebacker, and shut down the strong side of the formation, allow guys like Matt Milano and Dorian Williams to run and chase and make plays on the ball.
The draft is 1 month from tonight. The first round begins 1 month from tonight. We just talked about wide receiver. What do you think they still need at wide receiver? I mean, maybe speed, right? I would say, personally, that's my thought. I mean, they talked a lot about it. They don't have the burner necessarily. I also look at the group and say, where is a guy getting a lot of snaps from right now? But is there anybody that you look at in the draft and say, you know, Sal, maybe at 30 or even on day number two, there's a few guys that could fit for what they might be wanting?
Yeah, I'd say the only guy that I would look at pick 30 would be Matthew Golden, but I think many of us assume he's probably going to be gone by them. I think day two is the best fit, and I talked about Brady earlier, and yes, they do need a vertical threat, a guy that can, you know, take the top off the defense, and I know that kind of set up the expectations of getting a guy like that in free agency and why the reaction that we saw from a lot of fans when they signed Josh Palmer, that was not what we were expecting as fans. So I get that. But I think day two is kind of that area to look for a guy like that. I mean, not while he may not test very fast, but a guy like Trey Harris from Ole Miss is a guy that has won, especially if you're talking against man coverage. He can go down the field, primarily an X-type player. Kind of comes from an offense that I know it's a name that a lot of fans don't want to talk about anymore, but Gabe Davis, when he was at Central Florida, very similar, like, route tree and usage, made a lot of the routes look the same, whether it's a go route, a post route, a stop route. But I do think there are flashes on film of him running a pretty good route tree. I think he's a guy that could be brought in on day two that can push the, you know, take the cap off the defense with not just his top speed, but also how he runs routes. I think Luther Burden, I think he's a guy that's kind of falling right now, according to the masses. 5'11", 208, you know, a guy that can do a lot of stuff with the ball in his hand. And that's the thing, again, with Joe Brady's offense, yes, they need a vertical stretch guy, but in many ways, getting the ball out of Josh's hand was really the calling card for the Bills last year, whether it's to Khalil Shakir, whether it's to the running backs. And so I think guys like that, day two, I think that's where they're going to be looking if you're talking the wide receiver position, because I think, as most fans will agree, a lot of the focus will be on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, let's go there now, and we'll wrap up with interior and edge if you'd like to, but especially on the interior, most people think, Eric, that that's where the Bills are going to focus a lot, especially considering Ogunjobi is still going to miss the six games, and they already had a need right there. So this is a deep defensive tackle draft. We've heard a lot about that. What kind of guys, what kind of players do you think are in that sweet spot where they would fit the Bills and they'd be available?
So my draft crush at the tackle starts with Derek Harmon from Oregon. Now, he's a guy that likely his stock is going through the roof right now because he's got the measurables, 6'4", 313, 34-plus-inch arms. I think he's a perfect fit for the Bills scheme. He's very disruptive. When I first watched his film, it was the first prospect I looked at, and I was like, this is a Daquan Jones clone. He's got the size, the length, the ability to be disruptive in the pass game, but the ability to, you know, stack and anchor at the point of attack. 55 total pressures last year. He's just a super disruptive player, but he's a guy that might not even make it to 30. Another D-tackle from the MAC, Toledo, Darius Alexander, 6'3 and change, played at about 310 pounds, 34-inch arms, so he's got the length and size to play shade nose tackle in the Bills scheme. He's got the explosiveness, which the Bills love, so if you look at his combine stats of 31.5 inches in vertical, a broad of 9'4", and a 28 bench reps, in the bench press at 225, that's the second highest among D-tackles. I think he's another really good fit to not only play some time at shade nose tackle, but back up the three-tech position as well, especially once, while Ogunjobi serves that. And then finally, I know that everyone wants to talk about Kenneth Grant from Michigan. While I do think that early on he's probably more of a two-gap or a two-down guy, I do see flashes of that quickness and explosiveness that could win in the Bills scheme. And just the breadcrumbs that we've heard from this staff when it comes to evolving on defense, when Sean McDermott said that in his presser, and then the interview we did in the film room with Terrell Bernard last year, talking about how opposing offenses were attacking the Bills with ball control style and how they needed to get better on first down and then tighten coverage on later downs. I think guys like those three make sense, especially if you're talking in and around pick 30.
Eric Turner, Cover One. Great stuff over at Cover One. Tell everybody where they can find your work, the film breakdowns you guys are doing, and everything else.
Right. It's at CoverOne.net. We do salary cap stuff. We do film breakdowns. Every Wednesday night, we break down film, whether it's for the draft prospects or the games, post games. We break down film. We've had several of the Bills players on in the film room in the last few weeks. Michael Hoyt, as soon as he signed, we had him on. We had Terrell Bernard last week. Tonight, we're recording with Gregory Rousseau. So if you can find us on all social media platforms at Cover One and on the YouTube channel, again, Cover One.
You got it, buddy. Thanks for coming on today. I'm sure we'll catch up again. Thanks, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. That is Eric Turner doing a good job over there, Cover One. Some good film breakdown. Smart stuff. You want to learn a little bit more about football? You want to get a little more educated about some of the ways that, you know, players are being used, what their strengths are, scheme fits, schemes in general. Eric and I did some stuff last year. It was really just a gridiron 101. I think I have to remember what we called it, but we did a few audio sessions together where we just kind of basically broke down and explained what some of the terminology is in football, what a one technique is, what an X receiver is. You hear a lot of these things, and sometimes people go, I don't know what that is. I don't want to ask because I don't want to seem like I'm dumb. You're not. Not at all. I mean, football people like to throw football terms out there that a lot of other people don't know. And it's not unlike a lot of other things. So, yeah, I enjoyed that. And that was a good conversation right there. So we'll catch up with him again. And once again, he is at Eric J. Turner. That's with a K, Eric J. Turner, and at Cover One. Good stuff there. We'll take a timeout when we come back. Yesterday, last night, Matt Bove and I recorded It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. And I gave Matt a question. We did a real fun exercise. And man, it has really stirred the masses up here. So I'm going to go over what that exercise was as far as the draft and some really interesting data for you as well. And we'll pick it apart a little bit when we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Oops. Saves the ball with the leap. Knocked out of bounds. Deflected by me. And off to the side.
Now watch. Let's see if... Watch.
Oh, great. It's going deflection. Right for you. Did you see that?
Put it on the list. Deflection.
It was going for your hand.
What exactly happened there, Kevin Harlan? I think you need the video there to understand what happened.
Yeah, it's a little tough sometimes, but basically the ball is flying out of play onto the sidelines.
Okay.
And Kevin Harlan like stands up and just like basically like knocks it out of the air, like saves his color commentary guy, and the ball goes flying off in another direction.
I saw Kevin Harlan last year. We went out to eat one night before a Bills game and happened to go to a hotel where a friend of ours was, and I see Kevin Harlan down in the lobby, the hotel. Kevin Harlan! There you go. And it was really great, just kind of catching up. He's fantastic at what he does as well, and he was just super gracious, really nice. Speaking of that, you know what? I wanted to give a little, I don't do Hey Buddy during the off season, but it would have been a perfect Hey Buddy for this week. Did you see the New York Rangers celebrated Sam Rosen over the weekend? Sam Rosen is one of the best to ever do it. He really is. That's where it's a power play goal comes from. Like, he was the one that kind of, that was his signature saying. And I had a chance. So I went to Syracuse with Sam Rosen's son. His son was literally in my class at Syracuse. Same age as me. And found out, oh my God, his name is Garrett. Like, oh, you're Sam Rosen's son? Wow, that's really cool. Blah, blah, blah. So early 90s, we're friends. I don't remember exactly what year it was. Rangers are in Buffalo, and he's like, hey, my dad's calling the game in Buffalo. You know, if you want to go to the game. I said, sure. And back then, it was him and John Davidson were he was his color analyst. So I went to the game to meet Sam Rosen, hang out with his son. And his son said, his son, Garrett, was like kind of doing some stat work for them and things like that. So anyway, we go to the game. Here's what happened. If you remember, a lot of people remember this. You won't remember this, but you're going to be like, what are you talking about? Back at the old Odd, Josh, they had, when the visiting team, the visiting play-by-play and color guy, there was no seat for them in the press box. They literally had a bucket that overhanged, and you'd have to crawl into it, and you'd sit in a bucket. Like, think about the third level of KeyBank right now, and if hanging off the third level was a bucket where people would sit. And they were in this like caged bucket. That's what it was. It was called a bucket, I think. And they would have a camera there, and they'd have the color analyst and the play-by-play literally sitting there. So I go and I'm talking to Sam, and Garrett's there. And Garrett had a soda that he put down, and he went to grab it and he hit it and it fell over on top of everybody. And security comes up and they were like, "Hey, you need to leave." He's like, "I'm working here." But that's how they used to have the visiting play-by-play guy. People remember. I don't know. I've looked for pictures of it. You could see one in a picture of the Odd. I did find one time where I'm like, oh, yeah, there it is. Look at that thing. It was a little picture of it. If anybody could find a picture of that, send it to me. Because I always tell people about the story of the bucket where the visiting play-by-play and color commentator used to sit at the old Odd. It was fascinating because they could not be up in the actual press box. There was no room for them. So they did that. Anyway, so got to meet Sam, got to meet JD. Two decades later, I don't know, about 10 years ago now, I guess, maybe a little less, Rangers are in town. I go to a Sabres game. I'm up in the press box. I go up to Sam Rosen. I'm like, hey, Sam, I was friends with your son, Garrett, in school. I came. He's like, Sal, I remember you. It was amazing. And it was 20 years later. Very cool, right? Just to have that interaction with him and know that he remembered. And he was super gracious with his time. We talked about it. I said, hey, how's Garrett doing? And haven't talked to him in a long time. But either way, really cool. Sam Rosen, they celebrated Sam Rosen over the weekend with the New York Rangers. He's one of the best to ever do it. And I'm glad, don't love the fact that Rangers won a cup. It's not necessarily a hated rival. But I was glad that he got to call, a Stanley Cup championship in 94. Unfortunately, obviously, RJ never got a chance to call a Stanley Cup championship. The Rangers did. They hadn't won one since 1940, then they win one in 1994. And they're very disappointing this year, by the way, the Rangers, aren't they? They might miss the playoffs.
Lots of bad vibes around the Rangers right now.
Yeah.
Just like everything going on there with the players and all the stories coming out with like the management and everything. It's a weird.
Does it feel like they could
vibe.
Move on from Drury?
I don't know. I don't know if it's that bad, but if it's, like one of those toxic environments, then maybe, but it also feels like they're kind of on the edge of maybe another rebuild because, mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, their rebuild they just had where they got Kapokako and Alexi Lafreniere, it was 2 years. That was it. Yeah. Like they picked second overall and first overall and then they were right back at it. But it's like you got guys aging out like Artemi Panarin and Mika Zibanejad and all those guys. They just traded Jacob Trouba. Like, that's their captain, or former captain, I should say. There's a lot of, like, weird stuff in the Rangers organization right now, and I'm really curious as to where they go next.
Rangers right now are sitting on the outside looking in. The Senators and Canadiens hold the two wildcard spots, and they both have two games in hand on the Rangers, by the way. They've played two less games than the Rangers. The Rangers are a point behind the Canadiens, 5 points behind the Ottawa Senators, who are in town tomorrow night. It is the return of Dylan Cousins. I mean, he was just traded, but you got to think they'll do some sort of video thing for Cousins tomorrow, right? Right away?
They feel like it, yeah. There's got to be something. Olofsson got a video.
But how quickly was that? I think it would happen right away. Yeah. It's so quick, but I still think you do it. It's his first time back.
For sure.
I think it's kind of like it's kind of like the rule of doing these things.
And it's also like you knew it was coming. Like, you can look ahead at the schedule and see, oh, they're going to play the Senators again here. Like, so the people that do that sort of thing knew that they had to make that decision very quickly. So it's not like you had to wait a while and all the schedule's out. When is it going to be? You know, like, I think they're going to have something.
He has played well, Dylan Cousins. There's no doubt. I'm not sounding the alarms of, oh, here we go, another Conn Smythe winner winning the Stanley Cup for the Senators. But take a look what he's done since he's been in Ottawa. Let's see, 1, 2, 3 goals and 1, 2, 3, 4 assists. He's already got 7 points in 5, 6, 8 games. 7 points in 8 games.
He went into a place that had a lot of good vibes going, though.
Yeah,
I mean, they're on a playoff push, and there's a lot of stuff going on there that I think is influencing.
And I think that totally matters. I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you.
Because, like, look at what happened with Casey Mittelstadt last year. He did the same thing in Colorado, and then now this year he gets traded to Boston.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not saying that's going to happen to Dylan Cousins, but I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. The vibes part and what you're playing for and meaningful hockey means something. We haven't had that here in Buffalo in quite a while. All right, Matt Bove and I last night recorded It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Check it out. It's on the Odyssey app. It's wherever you pod, iTunes, Spotify, and, of course, the video. And you need to watch the video on this one. At Sal Sports is the YouTube channel. Subscribe to it. Watch the video of last night's pod because I put on the screen. It's a visual type of exercise. We did talk through it, but it is a visual exercise. And I asked Matt, I said, Matt, I put a spreadsheet together, of course I did, and said, all right, I have 7 different columns, and it's each round and every pick the Bills have had under Brandon Bean. So first round, here's all the players. Second round, here's all the players. Next column's third round, here's all the players. And, for example, he's had 6 first-round picks. Josh Allen, Tremaine Edmonds, Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, Dalton Kincaid, Kyrie Elam. We did this for every round. Only Brandon Bean, 2018 till now. And I told Matt, rank each guy according to how good of a pick it was in each round. So, obviously, Josh Allen's the best first-round pick. So he had Allen. And actually, I disagreed. His next one was Tremaine Edmonds, then Greg Rousseau. These are only first-rounders. Then Ed Oliver, Dalton Kincaid, Kyrie Elam. Now, obviously, a guy like Dalton Kincaid, book is still not written on him. He's only in year number 2. If he was fantastic, he could be higher, but he still has a chance to rise up this board. I would disagree and I would put Greg Rousseau at number 2 ahead of Tremaine Edmonds, but the rest I would keep. Ed Oliver, then Dalton Kincaid, and then, of course, Kyrie Elam at the end. This has sparked a lot of debate. Some people did not agree with Matt that he put Osiris Torrance ahead of James Cook as a second-round pick. What do you think about that? Matt has Osiris Torrance as a better second-round pick than James Cook.
I mean, I could see the argument.
I could, too. I didn't fight back much on it.
The offensive line is very stable, and it has gotten a lot more stable since he's been there. But, I mean, James Cook was...
And he started... Every game, he played every snap his rookie year. James Cook really didn't come into his own until his second year, which is fine, the same year they drafted Osiris, and he's been fantastic. But they are clearly the top 2 guys there, and then you go to Epenesa, Coleman, Bishop, Cody Ford, and Boogie Basham. Third round, the Bills have had a very good third round under Brandon Bean, okay? Spencer Brown, Matt gave number 1 as the best third round pick. Then Terrell Bernard, then Harrison Phillips, who's with Minnesota, has had a nice career. Then Dawson Knox, Devin Singletary, Dorian Williams, Zach Moss, and Dwayne Carter rounded out. That's a really good third-round class, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really good. And I think Dwayne Carter can really step things up this year, too. He's going to have a lot of opportunity early in the season. So,
How about this, though? This is a crazy stat, Josh. Have you looked at this sheet yet? Okay, I'm going to ask you this. Since 2018, Brandon Bean has had 55 draft picks, okay? He's drafted 55 players. How many fourth rounders? since 2018. He's had seven drafts. Mm-hmm. How many fourth rounders? I'll give you, okay, for example, he's had six first rounders and 10 fifth rounders. How many fourth?
Ooh. I feel like you're setting me up for either a very high number or a very low number.
Of course I am. You have to decide.
Man, I'm going to go on the lower end of things. I'm going to say like five.
Three. The Bills under Brandon Bean have only had three fourth-round picks.
I thought five was going to be too
low. I know, right? It's amazing.
That's crazy.
And they've been good. You ready? Taron Johnson, Gabe Davis, and Ray Davis. That's it.
Wow.
That's it.
And they've all been very good in their own respects. Like,
yes.
Taron Johnson is obviously
he's an all-pro.
Yeah. And then Ray Davis has been great this year. And Gabe Davis had...
As a fourth-rounder, Gabe Davis was a fine pick.
Yeah.
He's very good.
Yeah.
He had a good four-year run.
That's crazy. His picks in the later rounds are incredible.
Well, fifth round, there was this debate. Matt put Wyatt Teller as his best fifth-round pick over Khalil Shakir and a bunch of other guys that definitely wouldn't go there. But would you have Teller or Shakir there? And I agree with it. I think Teller. He's a two-time all-pro.
I think that's right, but it's just I think it's a name that people do forget about sometimes,
yes.
Just like because of just how everything happened and everything. But like Shakir's on his way though. I think Shakir is going to vie for that number one spot soon. But I think that's right for
Matt. I tweeted all this out. Go check it out at Sal Sports. I have the list. I have the rankings from Matt, and it was a really fun exercise. No doubt, Christian Benford has been his best sixth round pick. No doubt. The debate we had was between Damar Hamlin and Tyler Bass as the number two.
I mean, that's tough. That's tough because Tyler Bass, for a few years, he was nailing everything, and then there's that one stretch. But Damar Hamlin's really turned into something nice too. Like
as a sixth round pick, yeah. Damar Hamlin he started at safety last year for a team that went to the AFC title game. He's a sixth round pick,
and especially after everything that happened too.
Yes, right. Ray McLeod's on this list. Jaquan Johnson, who people say, like somebody said, he's a miss. Jaquan Johnson was a 4-year main special teams guy as a sixth round pick. You'll always take that for a guy like that. Isaiah Hodgins, Matt Araiza, Tylon Grable, who won the swing tackle job, and then how about this? The last round, the seventh round, the best seventh round pick, and I agree with it. Dane Jackson. He was a seventh-round pick of the Bills.
Yeah, that's right.
Over Darryl Bam Johnson, Alex Austin, who is still playing. He picked off Josh Allen. He's a main backup for the Patriots. Tommy Sweeney, Baylen Spector, and then you get down to some guys that really didn't play. So, pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
Here's another
Dane Jackson's a seventh-rounder, too.
Dane Jackson didn't make the team his first year. He was waived. He had to join the practice squad. He could have been picked up. He could have gone anywhere. And then he eventually was elevated, eventually signed, and we know where it is today. And then the other interesting anecdote that I found while looking at this is not totally like unique. I just think it's interesting because through 7 years of drafting, Brandon Bean has never drafted a player from Alabama, Michigan, or Ohio State. Now, there's been guys that they signed. Levi Wallace, Alabama. They traded for Amari Cooper. He went to Alabama. There's been guys, but never actually drafted anyone. And it's so funny, folks. I get people in my mentions saying, well, they only like these underdog stories, not big school. No. That's not true. They've drafted guys from big schools. And oh, by the way, spare me with all that. When I look back at Brett Veach's drafts, the Kansas City Chiefs general manager, the same amount of drafts, seven of them. He also drafted no one from Alabama, no one from Ohio State, and one fifth rounder from Michigan. That's it. Here's the point. And Howie Roseman, he has quite a few. Howie Roseman has just loaded up on Georgia guys, by the way, right? We all know that. Here's the point, folks. Where a guy went to school and where you draft from, what schools, has actually no correlation on how good an organization is. Josh Allen went to Wyoming, okay? I mean, Patrick Mahomes went to Texas Tech. So there you go. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and we'll wrap up your Monday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Okay, it was 6:10 when I said we had 10 more names in the transfer portal than it was a half hour before that. I'm sorry, it was 11:10 when we had like 610 names. It's been 43 minutes since then. How many you want to guess now?
I'm going to go with 657.
Close. 646 transfer names.
Wow.
In the transfer portal.
Basically,
it is a minute. It's a name a minute.
That's awesome.
It is a name a minute. People are like, how do you know? Verbalcommits.com. Go to verbalcommits.com and then just hit transfers. And then if you scroll down to the left, it has all the number of names. Like, I'm going to refresh right now. 647, baby. We got it. One more. Like, every time you refresh after every minute, there's another name there. All right. Good show today. Tomorrow, got a special treat for everybody. You ready? Micah Hyde's going to join us. Micah Hyde is going to be on the Extra Point Show tomorrow with us at 11 a.m. He is going to talk, obviously, about his career in Buffalo. He's retired, just announced his retirement, and his charity softball game is coming up on May 4th, Sunday, May 4th. So we'll talk with Micah Hyde tomorrow right here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. In the meantime, Sabres Live up next. Then it's One Bills Live, Chopin the Bulldog after that. Have a great rest of your Monday on WGR.